Oh, it's 10. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, Zoom. Oh, they wave.
Hi.
They're doing it again.
That was a lot of them.
Oh, wow. Happy Sunday. Happy June. Happy Lakeshore. Happy Minnesota. However you locate yourself, happy body, happy breath. Here you are. That was the talk. We're done. Isn't that nice? We're actually going to talk today about a haiku by my friend Issa. A lot of you know Issa. He's considered one of the great three grand masters of the art of haiku, traditional Japanese poetry. So if you have a program in front of you, you can follow along. If you do not have a program in front of you, you can look on with someone who does. And for you wonderful folks on Zoom, you can Google Issa. And it's in the chat. Thank you, Ginny, because it's in the chat is what I meant to say. So I'm going to read aloud to you for those of you who do not have access to the written word right now. And what I encourage you to do is just pay attention to how you feel. It's a haiku, right? So it's going to go by in about 10 seconds. And so I'll read it to you twice and just notice how you feel. Don't go, geese. Everywhere, it's a floating world of sorrow. Don't go, geese. Everywhere, it's a floating world of sorrow. So, if this was a retreat, we would just sit for several minutes and just allow whatever feelings are showing up in you to show up. You could become curious about them. You could allow them to manifest in your body. You could allow them to move through your heart. You might start noticing that maybe they have a storyline or a narrative that wants to show up too. And what I would suggest to you is that that's the transmission from Issa. That's the haiku. It isn't the words I just read. That's just the call, right? The response is you, right? It's participatory, it's art, right? So your echo is the haiku for you, right? That's what you're gonna feel. And I mean feel like it, feel, right? The way you apprehend the wind off the lake and the way you feel the sun on your skin when you walked in today. Perhaps you can feel other stuff in your body, in your heart this morning. Maybe you're happy to be here. Maybe you're anxious about something. Maybe both. Maybe you're sad, I don't know. But isn't that neat to think it's participatory? You know, Issa's body has been gone for a long, long time, hundreds of years. But these words translated into our language are still alive for us. And so they're alive insofar as they are read and received. Otherwise, the transmission doesn't happen. Does that make sense? So one more time, I'll read it one more time, and you can just sort of notice. Isn't it cool to know there's not a fail here? It's not a test. I'm not going to ask you questions about, right, Japanese haiku iconography and symbolism. And no. This is a Zen center, right? You trust the feeling. You trust the feeling, right? You don't have to kill it. You don't have to pin it to a board and label it. You can just trust it and let it keep moving like a butterfly. Issa has something for you today. Don't go, geese. Everywhere, it's a floating world of sorrow. So, I'm going to talk about this poem today. I'm going to turn it into a Buddhist thing, because that's what we do when we're sitting in this seat. And these are just my impressions, but as I just got through saying, you already have the poem, it's yours. The poem is how you feel when you hear this. So don't let anything that I say ruin it. The meaning I'm making out of it is really the meaning I am making out of it. I'm making it up, right? It doesn't make it less true. It just means I'm making it up. So Issa is my favorite. I do like Issa. Mostly because he's kind of famously the irrationally soft-hearted one who's always rescuing spiders from the drain and, you know, talking about nature and little animals, and he's kind of the champion of the underdog. If you want to read really friendly, fun, cool haiku, read Issa. I-S-S-A is how you spell his name, Issa. He's just really lovely to read. He was a Pure Land Buddhist, so some of the Buddhist overlay that I'm going to project onto this, I come by honestly. He is a Buddhist. He's not a Zen Buddhist, but he's a Pure Land Buddhist. And for the sake of where we're going today, it doesn't make any difference. He's in full Buddhist mode here, in my eyes. And so the way I'm going to talk about this poem today, I discovered this poem on Twitter because Issa has an account. I'm assuming you all know that. I'm assuming that is not news to anyone in this room. All of us follow Issa, do we not? On Twitter. Come on, you guys. Isn't that funny? Kobayashi Issa has a Twitter account. There you go. Go home, look it up, follow Issa. Every day you get a poem. I'm like, oh, come on. This is awesome. This is awesome. I notice my emotional response to that particular Twitter feed is a little different than my emotional response to some other Twitter feeds. Oh, he's just like, oh, thank you for the palate cleanser, my friend. So that's where I discovered it. But the way I'm going to talk about this today, I am going to make the assumption that this poem is about seeing very deeply that the world is filled with suffering, and then making a choice about how to respond to it. It's a pretty easy overlay for me to make because that's Buddhism. I have not just said anything that's surprising, I'm sure, to anybody, because that's Buddhism. Oh, I recognize that the world is filled with suffering, that human life is hard. We call it the first noble truth. And then the entire rest of what we call this tradition is about, well, okay, now what? So I'm suggesting that that's what this poem is about. I think there's a choice. Because the world is filled with suffering, I choose to leave. Or because the world is filled with suffering, I choose to stay. Basically, that's what it feels like it comes down to me. All the ways we leave, you know, I distract and I wander off and I go back to sleep again and I numb it and I avoid it and I repress it and I suppress it and I deny it and I rationalize it. And I, ooh, right? It's easier to think about sadness than to feel sadness. That's why I said the poem is in your chest, right? That's not in your head. And Buddhism as a tradition seems to really deeply recognize, ooh, it hurts. Hurts, doesn't it? So, since it does, we have a choice. And it's a powerful choice. And to discover that we have agency is quite brilliant. It really does change our experience. That's the whole tradition, right? So, that's what I'm pretending that Issa's talking about today. And I'm going to talk about it line by line because that's what I like to do. The first line is, don't go, geese. Ugh. That could be the whole poem for me. I'm just like, God, that's so sweet. It just takes me to such a sweet space that he brings in animals. Don't go, geese. So we don't know. Maybe this is their seasonal migration. Maybe this is just geese moving from pond to pond or lake to lake. Maybe he just sat down to have his lunch and they wandered off. We don't know. But we understand the words, don't go geese. Suzuki Roshi, one of the great pioneers of Zen in the West, said to a student who met with him during a very difficult long retreat, a session, the student was telling him, I can't handle it, I want to go. And Suzuki Roshi is recorded as saying, you can leave, of course, but there's nowhere to go. Man, that's good. You can leave, of course, but there's nowhere to go. Those of us who have done meditation retreats, actually those of us who have done meditation, whether it's a long series or a short series, have experienced not wanting to be in the place we are at. And we think maybe that's physical, like maybe if I got up and left this retreat, if I got away from 3343 East Bede Mikaska Parkway, I would get away from this thing. This sucks. I am pissed. I am sad. My back hurts. I am confused. I am tired. The person next to me is breathing loud, and I have got to get out of here, man, right? I'm assuming I'm not alone and having this experience. And so what Suzuki is saying really, really wisely, and what Issa is saying really, really wisely is, yeah, if you want to go, go. But you know that when you leave, you're going with you, right? You're still there. There literally is nowhere to go. In fact, the reason we come here, there, the cushion, the chair, whether we do this at home or we do it at 3343, is so that we can make the choice to figure out what is the thing that I'm trying to get away from. Maybe there's a way of making friends with that thing, or understanding it. Figuring out what it is, why it keeps showing up, to investigate something deeply. Wow, that's actually why I came here. I came here for engagement. I did. I came here to feel more deeply, not less, right? Don't go, geese. Don't go. Don't go. But I really identify with the geese. Of course I do. I really identify with that student telling Suzuki Roshi, I want to go. I really identify with that student. I really do. That poor student is all of us wanting to leave our lives as they are, wanting to leave the world as it is. I know we all know this feeling. You've read the news. You've been alive. You're in a body. You're dissatisfied with the world, are you not? Dissatisfaction with the world is really just dissatisfaction with the self, since all we see in the world is just a projection of self. The thing I'm upset about is a little bit different than the thing you're upset about. There's some similarity in that feeling. But dissatisfaction is just another word for judging. So what you're actually saying here is that you judge yourself as unsatisfactory. And you also project that judgment onto the world. We've just called that, in this tradition, we call that the first and second noble truth. Suffering exists, and I'm wanting it to be different. And the flavor of that is going to be ever so slightly different for all of us, because we are separate individuals, and the feeling is also exactly the same, and the trend is exactly the same, and the dynamic is exactly the same, because we are not separate. Dissatisfaction with experience, dissatisfaction with self, dissatisfaction with where we imagine in the external world it's coming from. Oh man, I wish that was different. In fact, I got a recipe for you. I can tell you how you should be different. You want me to tell you how you should be different? It makes for great relationships. Just make a list of all the things that your dear friends could do to change. Dissatisfaction. So we are in good company. There are 8 billion of us on this planet right now who do that, and we do it every day. It's part of the deal. It's part of the deal. It's not a pathology, it's just a response. It's part of what we do. So that same Suzuki Roshi also said, very famously, a lot of us have heard this one, you're perfect the way that you are. and you could use an improvement. It's not a contradiction. It's an inclusively complete truth. If we want to tell the truth, we have to include both sides. You are perfect the way you are. You could use some improvement. Those are not two separate statements that contradict one another. That is one true thing. It is inclusive. Does that make sense? Boom and boom. Those are both true and are true simultaneously. And one is not 50% true. They're both 100% true. So I appreciate that your brain doesn't understand the math. I know my brain doesn't understand that math either. But if you move the discerning, knowing organ down about 12 inches, this organ understands that completely. It does not have a problem with that kind of stuff. The heart's way better at doing math in a lot of ways. It just doesn't fight with the 50-50 thing and numbers making sense and adding up. Come on, man. You drive me crazy, and I love you. The heart's like, yep, sounds right. That's my experience. Wow. So the key is the lens that we look through. When we look through the judgment, when we look through our dissatisfaction, when we look through our grasping desire, Buddhism has a lot of different words for this. We are forever dissatisfied. The world is forever dissatisfying. And I understand that. When we see through the lens of enlightenment, through the lens of unitive awareness, through the lens of love, if you wish, the world is always complete and radiant. And those two things do not contradict each other. They're both halves of an inclusive truth. I know that I am a radiant being, and you are a radiant being, and we are one radiant being, and there's no problem. There's never been a problem. How could there be a problem? Right? When we really go deep into experience, there's not a problem to be found. There just isn't. Right? Zen's not alone in this. I'm not giving you some Zen party line here. I'm talking about the insights of everybody who's ever woken up. It doesn't matter what tradition they're part of, what color their skin is, or where they're from, or what language they speak. This is the great insight. When your eyes are fully open, you just see there's not a problem. There never has been a problem. Everything is radiant. Everything is whole. It's complete. It's completed. It's perfect. And what a mess. Holy macaroni. We've got a long list of things to do. This dumpster is on fire. Wow. Can you feel that one doesn't have to leave for the other to show up? Those are two halves of the same thing. I think we need both halves so much to ventilate one another, to inform one another. Our tradition really deeply embraces both of these things. So deeply that these teachings come from this place, and then this place, and then both, and then this place, and then this place, and then both, and then this place, and then. So when you're first exposed to Zen literature, whether it's poetry or sutras or Dharma talks or whatever, you go, what is going on in that place that's contradicting all of the time? Land, man, what is your deal? Do you guys even know what your thing is about? Is it all horrible or is it all wonderful? I mean, come on. Right? Worst concert ever. Best concert ever. Worst, oh, it's so, right? Until finally you're like, oh, I get it. Those are both true. I really, really get it. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? It really is nice. It's funny that some part of us knows that this is true. The very first time I read Suzuki Roshi's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, I always refer to him in my head because he's one of my very first Zen books. So he just has a place in kind of my hardwiring. And I was like, he's contradicting himself like three different times in the same paragraph. He is either completely mental, or something's going on here. You know? Isn't that fascinating? Read the Heart Sutra. You just go, wait, of course there's something going on here. But I can only get so close to it. I can only get so close to it using language. So don't go geese. Or go geese. Off you go. Off you go. It's a floating world of sorrow. Leave. Go ahead. Go from pond to pond, lake to lake, season to season, migrate. Off you go. Fly away. Okay. It's your goose nature. I mean, stay and walk on your little web. This is a sign language for goose feet. That's not true. They just look like goose feet. Stay and walk on your little web feet, or fly away on your big goose wings. Either way, it's a floating world. Also, you can stay, you can go. Both are part of your nature. So whether we imagine that we are perfect or we imagine we could use some improvement, our practice in this room, our practice at this center, our practice in this tradition is the same. We notice, we call that zazen. I will notice. I will notice. It's a particular kind of noticing. We can call it mindfulness if we want to be Buddhist. We can call it curious, kind, interested, intimate. Willingness to connect, acceptance. What we're talking about is noticing our experience from our yes. That's our yes, that goes yes. That's why I think it's really important that Suzuki Roshi gave his two statements in the order that he did. You're perfect the way you are. Can you feel the yes there? Don't worry about it. You're fine. Relax. Now, you got that part? Okay, good. Now, right? Sit up straight, right? Mind your manners, take your turn. You got some centers in your teeth, you might wanna, right? Stop bugging your sister. You could use some improvement. Let's pay attention, right? Do you notice the way you just talked to your da-da-da? Was there something going on there for you? That seemed a little short. Oh, maybe there's, can you feel it? There's work to be done. But the yes is first. I see that it's here. I see that it's here. I see that it's here. There's the acceptance. There's the curiosity. There's the intimacy. That's why we say compassion first, compassion first, compassion first. There's the yes. Has to come from that. Otherwise, the you could use some improvement is an attempt to get to the yes. If I'm good enough, then there'll be a yes. If I could really improve, then maybe Suzuki Roshi would say, I'm perfect as I am. I'll set up a little straighter. Right? We even notice our no from our yes. Do you notice your no? Yes, you do. For those of you watching on Zoom, everybody in the room is nodding. They all notice. They totally notice their no. And they're noticing their no from their yes, meaning, ah, this pisses me off. Everybody says, oh, it's 75 and sunny. I don't like it. I get sunburned out there. It's too hot for me. I get bitten by a mosquito 3 different times. No. Right? Mm. But I'm noticing my no from my yes. Oh, I see that that's showing up. Oh, you're here. Oh, look, there's a personal preference. It's kind of funny, actually. Can you feel it? I don't have to make it go away, but I can notice it from my yes. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? So the don't go geese in our poem is a way of describing our choice to practice here, to stay here, to keep our seat. And that is a choice. And that is where our freedom lies. And I think that feels like a contradiction. It's rough right now. Oh, you should stay with that. That feels like the opposite of freedom, I understand. But when we do meditation, we end up finding that the decision to stay, the choice is the freedom. I could get up and leave, or I could stay. I'm deciding to stay, now it's mine. Now there isn't the resistance, now the no has turned into the yes. Does that make sense? Did I say that too fast? No, you guys are nodding. Okay. When the dog is chasing you, turn around and whistle for it. That's Mark Twain. Right? I kind of don't like quoting Zen teachers when I'm giving talks. I'm like, I think it's way more fun to... Because that's easy, right? They've already done the work for me. Yeah. It's way more fun to like, you know, anyway. When the dog is chasing you, turn around and whistle for it. So you know that experience. The dog is chasing you all the time. You've never not been chased. I'm assuming you've had that experience. Oh, it's always one thing. If I could just run fast enough and get away from that thing, wouldn't I feel good? What we're describing here is that beautiful kung fu move of, oh, no. Come home. I am that home. You are that home. You got plenty of space. You can hold whatever that thing is you're running from. In fact, you're infinitely large, so don't worry about it. That feeling you've been running from, it's okay. It's a feeling, you can hold it. You can touch it, you can be with it. It's okay. That narrative about yourself, that truth, that thing,
Yeah.
Really, you can. You just can. Plenty of space. Plenty of space. Can you feel like Zazen is like a place of direct engagement? Holy cow. No wonder we face the wall when we do it, right? We're not doing that today. But, you know, in this tradition, when we sit, we face the wall. What a talk about a position of not running. Come, come. I'll see you, right? A fall we say yes to is a dive. A fall we say yes to is a dive. We can choose to participate. Don't go geese. So that's line number one. And I got to be quick today because we got a long thing we have to do when I'm done. So I got to go fast. Line number two, impermanence. Everywhere it's a floating world. That's the second line. Everywhere it's a floating world. The term floating world, I don't know the Japanese. It's oftentimes translated into English floating world. That's a pretty common term for impermanence. The bubble, the lightning flash, the phantom, the dream. It's floating. It's just, it's like clouds. You all understand it. It's a floating world. It's a floating world. Remember this morning when you were making breakfast? Can you find that? I mean, it was there, right? Right? Can you feel it? It's just, when you watch your experience really, really carefully, you're just watching it vanish. It's arising and vanishing, and arising and vanishing so fast that after a while the words arise and vanish don't even really matter anymore. It's just realizing all of it is very ephemeral. It's ephemeral. It's ephemeral. We've fallen in love with a dream. Right? This moment you're trying so hard to get away from is actively leaving right now. You don't have to push it to leave. It's leaving. Show me a feeling you have had that has shown up and never left. Show me a thought, that really irritating thought that showed up and then just stayed. You can't, because you'd still be thinking it, right? Of course not. You've never had an experience that didn't leave. It left right away. It left right away. Even the ones that seem to go on for a long time, in this tradition we say, look closer. The flavor of your grief this morning, when you were making breakfast, is different than the flavor of your grief now. It's ever so slightly hotter. It's ever so slightly lighter. It's infused with just a little bit more hope. It's infused with just a little bit more anger. It's different right now than it is right now. Everywhere is a floating world. Basic Buddhism, right? One of the three marks of existence, impermanence, suffering, and non-self. We're not talking about non-self today. And if you're Thich Nhat Hanh, it's impermanence, joy, and non-self. That's another talk for another day, with a different haiku by Issa, probably. It's a floating world. No matter how much you have been warned, death always comes without knocking. Why now is the cry? Why so soon? It's the cry of a child being called home at dusk. Margaret Atwood wrote that. Margaret Atwood wrote that. No matter how much you've been warned, death always comes without knocking. Why now is the cry? Why so soon? It's the cry of a child being called home at dusk. Lizzie Stewart, in the book It's Not What You Thought It Would Be, says, what they don't tell you about the end of the world, the lunatics and the scientists, is that it happens every day. The world from before is gone, and there is a new world, and it's completely different. That's good dharma. I don't know the first thing about Lizzie Stewart, but I read that last night when my talk was already written, and I wrote it on the back of my Ireland page-a-day calendar, because I went, oh, there's the end of my talk. Thank you, Lizzie Stewart. Boy, I know I probably owe royalties or something for quoting her. That's so brilliantly put. That's the truth of impermanence. Really poetically stated. What they don't tell you about the end of the world is that it happens every So now, as Zen students, we get to argue a little bit if we feel like we want to argue with the word end. And then it happens every day, it happens every moment, it happens every instant. It is always happening, it is always disappearing, and it is always arising. So what this can give us is an amazing feeling of expansive hope and possibility. Because the thing is changing and leaving and going. I'm making this fisty gesture to describe the thing that you imagine is afflicting you. Habit of mind, habit of heart, relationship, circumstance, those things are changeable. They are impermanent, and you have agency. And so freedom, freedom, freedom is always possible. It's funny for a religion that starts with human life is characterized by suffering, right? That's our first sentence, really, the first noble truth, that we're infinitely optimistic. And I mean that literally. Optimism without a limit or a boundary. Infinitely optimistic. It's kind of inevitable that it gets better. I don't want to give away the ending. So I'm whispering. So the third line, and then I will be done. The third line is of sorrow. Don't go, geese. Everywhere it's a floating world of sorrow. I don't know why I'm smiling. But this poem, just like, oh, it's so beautiful. It's so poignant. It's so true. I just love it. Isn't that cool? You know that song that was really, really, really sad? And you put it on repeat? Wow, being a human is a trip, isn't it? Oh man, I can't make you love me by Bonnie Raitt. Put that thing on repeat. It'll ruin your day. It'll be like the best ruined day you've ever had. It's just wrenching. And you're like, I'm not separate from you, Bonnie. I know that feeling. Oh my God, we're not separate. There's joy inside of my sorrow. The joy was never absent. This was part of the whole thing. I'm saying yes. You know that's why you put the song on repeat, right? So you can say yes to that. You're saying yes to it. Come back again. Come back again. Come back again. Come home. I can hold you. You're sad, aren't you? He left, didn't he? It's okay. Come back home again. It's all right. You can tell me that story over and over and over. I'll never get tired of listening to it. Tell me again. Yeah. Can you feel it? You're loving your suffering. Hot dog. You've been practicing for a long time, haven't you? Yes, you have. All right. With a little help from Bonnie Raitt. So Issa uses floating world in the traditional Buddhist sense. This world is not only temporary, but it is also marked with sufferingness. Again, the second of the traditional three marks of existence. Suffering, non-self, and impermanence. So migration or leaving, in one way of understanding this poem, is pointless. In such a thorny world. We can read this poem to be, don't go, geese. Everywhere you go, it's suffering. In other words, there's no point. There's no point in leaving, it's gonna suck there too. It sucks here. And wherever you go, it's gonna suck. Right? That's the Suzuki Roshi. Oh, the retreat's hard for you. You can get up and leave if you want, but I promise the hard for you part is gonna be the same. Because it ain't going anywhere, right? So we can say that our Issa poem is about the complete despair and pointlessness that comes with realizing that we are trapped. Don't bother going anywhere, it's crappy all over. I think if Buddhism had just stayed there, that would have been the end of it. That sucks, right? That's like, wow. You guys, your religion is the worst. We have three members now, three. So that's one interpretation. And when I'm really, really sad, you guys, that's the version that I read. I'll be honest with you. I've experienced times where that level, that was all I had. That was all I could see. I wasn't any bigger than that. And so I wasn't being kind to my suffering. I was my suffering. I was it. That was it. Can you feel how small that gets? Right away. Is that my fault? No. No, no, no. This is what human beings do. We identify with it. Hey, Bush, how are you doing? I've had a kind of a rough day. I'm kind of pissed. I am angry. I've just identified my whole self with the feeling I'm currently having. That's not right. No, it isn't, but it's how we talk. We talk about it all the time because it appears to be true. I am happy. I am thirsty. I am angry. I am. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're the one who notices all those things. They're just happening to you. I'm not angry any more than I happen to be this outfit. I'm going to change it when I go home, right? But I appreciate, I don't ever want to sound glib when I'm sitting in this seat. I appreciate that when the floating world of sorrow shows up, that it really can feel like there's no point. And I know that that is not a true statement. Of course there is a point. But I also know that when we're in that place, it can feel as if there isn't. I want to honor that feeling. I will not honor that narrative because that narrative is false. The narrative that says there's no point. No. From a spiritual point of view, that's lazy. Nope. Despair. Nope. Lazy. That's a temptation. Wrong. But I also appreciate the feeling and how real the feeling is. Does that make sense? The feeling of despair? Yes. The narrative of despair? No. One of those things is true. It hurts like crazy. And it tells me that, no. That's why we said Zazen. So I have a chance to sit and experience this feeling. And then I start to notice, oh, it has a storyline that keeps it going. And so much of the story isn't true. It's so mean. It's so small. It's so petty. It's filled with ignorance. It's unexamined. And you go, oh, no. I get it. Can you feel it? This is the wisdom arm. The compassion arm is down here. Yeah, it's really hard today. But then the wisdom part can kick in and go, oh, and you know what? Actually, part of why you're suffering is because that thing is telling you really horrible stuff that ain't true. You can turn that one off. That's a song you don't have to put on repeat. So, we can say the poem is Don't Bother Going Anywhere, It's Crappy All Over, or, and of course this is where I'm going to go because I am a Mahayana Buddhist, we can say that our Issa poem is about making the choice to stay here in the impermanent world of suffering and finding our complete freedom in the making of that choice. You can leave, of course, but there's nowhere to go. If that student chooses to stay, can you imagine he has just had a different experience? I'm trapped and I want to leave. Okay, but there's nowhere to go. If he says, you know what, I think I will stay, can you feel that he's just chosen something? Therefore, he's whistling for the dog. He's turning the fall into a dive. He is saying, yes, I will. I'm saying yes. I'm here because I choose to. Can you feel it? The power of the agency there? He's going to have a very different experience. There's nowhere to go. And in Zen, the truth, there is nowhere to go, is understood to be wonderful. It's a relief. The yes is the relief. The yes. Rilke, you guys know Rainier Maria Rilke, the great Dharma teacher. Let it all happen to you, beauty and terror. Oh, man. Let it all happen to you, beauty and terror. And we usually think, oh, that's the key words there, the beauty and the terror. You got to let them. The beauty and the terror. I want to accept the beauty and I want to keep the terror. Yeah. Those are important. The key word there isn't beauty and terror. The key word is let. Let it happen to you. Let it happen to you. That's Zazen. I'm going to sit still and just let it happen. I will let it happen. I'll let it happen. I'll stay right here and notice all of it. I'll fall in love with all of it, but I'm going to let it happen. Experience it all. Only no causes suffering. That's the core teaching of this tradition. So there is no suffering here because the yes has already happened. When you say yes to your no, it's transformed. It's like grandma meeting you at the birthday party when you were little. She hugs you first, then she wipes the frosting off your face. The yes is always first. This is our vow, our bodhisattva vow. The vow is to choose to always say yes. to every morning, to every breath, and to the entire floating world of sorrow, because there is nowhere else to go. So, I appreciate your attention today. I'll remind you of how you felt at the very beginning when we first heard Issa together. I'll remind you to remind yourself of that feeling. I'll remind you that's your real poem. Look him up if you want. Follow his Twitter feed if you want. Listen to this talk again, never listen to it again, I don't care. But if something is moving in you in a response to his words from all those hundreds of years ago, I encourage you to pay attention to that. That's kind of cool, right? To be able to say yes to something so beautiful. To say yes to your life. So I thank you. And because we've got something